hour number one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, welcome to the show today, folks. Another happy Tuesday in Santa Cruz. Man, we left Boulder Creek this morning. Must have been 80 degrees. And coming down here about 66. It was nice. Nice.
Yeah, what's going on? It's summer in October here.
Well, at least up in the mountains.
All right. That global warming thing. No escape.
Oh, that's right. Don, if you got a view of the sky tonight, you'll be able to see a special moon event tonight. There's an eclipse of the moon.
Oh, full moon eclipse. All right. So for anybody who wants to stay up until 2:30 in the morning, you can see a red moon.
It's called the blood moon. Mm-hmm. Total lunar eclipse.
And it's during the middle of these sunspots. So if you hear a little clicking and our signal sounds a little funny, just realize it's because we're collecting some solar energy here from the sun.
Yeah.
Little coronal mass ejection is hitting us.
It's kind of fun. There's a lot of solar events going on this week. Like, for example, you can watch live today at 5:15 Eastern time. So that's like soon.
2:15
California
time,
What? There is an opening of a new groundbreaking ceremony for a huge telescope in Hawaii.
Well, wait a second. So it's Eastern time, but the thing is happening in Hawaii?
The TM
is
in,
goes the other way.
Right, no.
Hawaii
it's
later
EDT.
Than here.
EDT, 5:15 EDT, according to the data here.
5:15.
Okay, so that's going on during our show. A new groundbreaking telescope. The construction of the 30-meter telescope officially begins today.
All right, and this is on which island?
Mauna Kea.
Big Island.
Right.
Yeah.
Should be fun.
Excellent. So they're getting a brand new giant telescope for the night sky.
That's it. Mm. About 15 minutes. That's starting up.
Oh, good. Well, we'll have to look for some opening ceremonies a little later tonight.
15 minutes.
All right. Well, if you see something live, you let me know.
Space.com, in case you want to check it out.
Okay.
Other news. Have you heard of the new film called Interstellar?
Interstellar.
Yeah.
I do believe I heard
it's Christopher Nolan's
about
new
that.
Film.
It's a 3D action film that's set in Oculus Rift.
No, that's a version of it. That's what we're announcing today.
Okay.
As you probably have heard, the Oculus Rift is the new VR standard for looking at stuff in VR world, the virtual reality.
Yeah, for anybody who has that preference set that enjoys Matrix media and you want to immerse yourself in that virtual reality, then Oculus Rift is the app you got to have and the device you got to have. It's almost like a ski mask, and you wear it and it puts you into an immersive world where you're looking around and you can turn your head and you can see what's going on in that virtual world in every direction.
It was famously shown for the first time in popular media in the film Lawnmower Man. Mm-hmm. Which is written here in Santa Cruz.
Right.
Back in the 90s.
VR was shown that way, probably not Oculus Rift.
No, yes.
Yeah, Oculus Rift has been purchased by Facebook, who was very interested in the social network because Oculus Rift is a device that is provided for gamers and people who want to take their avatar into 3D virtual spaces with other avatars. And so you'll have a bunch of virtual players that you can all engage in the virtual worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was interesting to Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And so the 3D Interstellar is an ideal film for doing this because they take you in through wormholes and all kinds of fun interstellar space experiences, which you get to experience as immersive media.
Oh, boy.
Sound and
I mean, experience. I get seasick just on the roller coaster simulation, man. I can't even imagine jumping through wormholes in any direction in Oculus Rift space.
Well, this will be hitting IMAX theaters in New York, Houston, L.A., Washington initially, and then spreading over the rest of the country shortly after that. That's coming up next month.
Okay, Interstellar. Okay.
Something
All right.
entertaining for you, though.
Get ready for a VR leaping experience.
Mm-hmm. In terms of entertainment also, I found an interesting, I guess you could say, an animation at the New York Times called Me and the Universe. We have a nice link to that. And it kind of explains your relationship to the totality of the universe.
Okay. Well, you'll have to give us more than just a link, Dr. Future. What did you find interesting about this graphic?
Well, it starts off with
this is radio. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you start off with the Big Bang.
Right. Okay.
And then you see these clouds of particles that are agitated in all kinds of crazy ways that's hard to describe, like a lot of jiggling. Then about 380,000 years into it, they begin to herd a bits of stuff, and they start making bigger clumps, and then they start to form stars, and then they start to form solar systems and planets, and then life on the planet, and then fish and rabbits and monkeys and all the way up to humans.
All right. So yeah. A little history of the universe there in the New York Times, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a really, and they also go into the future.
Oh.
Where they show you dying quietly in your sleep in the year 2066. And after cremation, your ashes are absorbed into this underground fungal superorganism.
We're eaten by the mushroom brain. Okay. Yeah.
And then your great-grandniece slips on the floor in a nursing home, and that's the last living memory that they have of you from this time period.
Oh, okay.
2133.
The last little child who remembers you when
anything
you were alive.
Anything from this time in history, yeah. Uh-huh. The last person.
Oh, boy.
Probably be dead in 2133.
All right, so we can go back several billion years, but we can only go forward several hundred.
Yes, and
How ironic.
And then they have a mass planetary extinction, which cuts down on the number of humans to 5 geographically isolated small bands. And one of the band grows into a water-dwelling humans, like mermaids.
Oh, like yeah, that. Sea monkeys.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the Earth is struck by an asteroid. Not good.
Unless we succeeded in getting off the planet by then.
Well.
So this is a real sci-fi.
The asteroid actually
huh?
helps you. You know, the asteroid hits and you're actually microscopic fragments of the planet go out into deep space and they impact other solar systems nearby. And boom, life is spread. So this whole cycle from Big Bang to this is up on our webpage.
Oh, boy. We love
drfutureshow.com/links. Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun graphic.
All right, folks. So go check out the history of the universe and the future.
Involving you.
DrFutureShow.com. We'll be right back here on KSEO after the break.
Also fascinating that's going on right now here on the Dr. Future Show is a very high-tech shipwreck investigation, marine archaeology off the coast of Greece. It's the Antikythera shipwreck. You heard of that one?
I have heard of the device, the Antikythera. Yeah, yes. The shipwreck. It's a particular place in Greece where they found this ancient navigational device.
That's right. Antikythera is an island, a remote Greek island, where a treasure ship by that name sank in 70 BC. Mm-hmm. And some new high-tech gear is allowing a team for the first time to examine and evacuate a wreck with really care and thoroughness that you only usually see on a ground-based archaeological dig.
This is going to be fascinating. If anything about the show today has a theme, it's all of the high-tech gear that people are using in strange new worlds and strange new ways. This gear that's being used to investigate this shipwreck is a whole bunch of different kinds of automated tools that can get more information about what's going on under the sea than ever before.
Yeah, they have this yellow torpedo-shaped vehicle that glides through the Mediterranean water about 10 feet above the 2,000-year-old shipwreck and takes 50,000 pictures in a three-dimensional photo map of the site. That's one of the first things they do is go over it and get three-dimensional pictures of it. And then once it's mapped, then they have a really good look at the underwater site from a three-dimensional perspective.
Wow.
This ship crashed into a sheer rock wall along the island of Antikythera and sank. And what's interesting about it is it had a huge array of very precious objects. It had the richest cache ever found in the Mediterranean. It had life-sized bronze and marble statues. It had gem-encrusted gold jewelry. It had coins. And the only example of an ancient analog computer. You know, it's considered the oldest computer made by humankind.
Right. Yeah, and this is all in the Antikythera exhibit that is in a museum.
Well, the mechanism is, the Antikythera mechanism is in the exhibit. But this is new research. This is going on until October 12th.
They're doing a new dive right now.
That's correct, at this very minute. It was first spotted by Greek sponge divers back in 1900, and they used diving suits and the old metal helmets of the time. And they hauled up the fairly first batch of treasure then. A couple of the divers died back then because they didn't really understand the whole issues of decompression and nitrogen and the blood and bends and that sort of thing. But that's when the Antikythera mechanism was brought to the surface. And it wasn't until 1976 that a more modern expedition mounted by Jacques Cousteau and his team hauled up more bounty from the wreck. It's about 135 to 185 feet deep. So divers could only spend a few minutes on the bottom before having to deal with nitrogen sickness.
And now they can go down for like days.
Right? Well, now they have what's called the exosuit, which was built in northern Vancouver by the Nyutco Research Company. And it allows divers to operate down to about 1,000 feet up to 40 hours at a time. Plus all these autonomous submarines that allow them to explore down there. So a pretty interesting amount of technology they brought to the bear to create a modern archaeological dig underwater.
Yeah, this article really makes it seem like there's like a whole brave new world in exploring under the sea for treasure.
Yeah. Well, scuba rebreathers are used. They're using drones that take pictures of the site from the air.
Right.
The exosuit under the water?
Yeah, this exosuit looks right out of NASA. I mean,
or space
sort of
suit, man.
Jules Verne meets Lunar Lander, right? It's got a big old iron dome for
like
the
Iron
head.
Man, man.
And yeah, it really looks like the original NASA spacesuits, but apparently it pressurizes the diver and somebody can go down and live in this thing for up to 40 hours. I don't know. I guess you could sleep if you wanted to.
Aussies.
1,000 feet below the waves.
University of Sydney is very involved with it. Mm-hmm. A number of Aussies are using these robot vehicles. They obtain sound images as well as visual images of the stuff. And this technology is getting more compact, less expensive as time goes on. And it's becoming more and more the new norm for looking at shipwrecks.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So a very interesting article in Scientific American linked to our website.
The links are on the links page, so.
Right.
You got to go to the links page if you want to see these links.
Yeah, man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
so.
There is a new gadget that I thought was very interesting. I wanted to mention it to you folks, called the Solar Energy Harvester. That is a drop-in machine, I guess you might say, to provide renewable energy, water, and heat to off-grid communities.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a 10-meter-high sun-tracking dish, and it's been designed to be transported in a single shipping container to be delivered to anywhere on the planet. It provides clean water, electricity, can generate heat, and provide refrigeration in one little device.
Yeah, so it's a self-contained little urban power package.
Yeah. The CoreTech is a water-cooled solar panel developed by Bruno Michel and his colleagues at IBM. And it's been just developed, and they're ready to deploy this flower-shaped structure out on the planet where emergency power, water, and light are needed.
Right. Okay. So as long as there's sunshine, this truck-based solution can be shipped in as long as a truck can get there, so I guess it can't be after a big disaster or an avalanche or something, you know.
Well, I suppose, yeah.
Or flood. I mean, you basically have to be able to drive there and then park and then deploy this big old 10-foot solar tree, and then that creates this whole water purification, heat exchange system, and power grid.
Pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. This goes really well with another article that I see you have here about the robots that are being trained.
That's another emergency thing.
Deal with emergency situations. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Right. Mrs. Vieja is referring to these robots that can provide you with power in a disaster situation. They will go in and they will actually, there's a group of robots. This is still in the early phases of this, but they can go in and they can rebuild infrastructure, providing cellular connections. They can help search and rescue operations by providing power and emergency power. And the robot team will go out there and bring power to where you need it. They'll reestablish communications and power. And there's a little video to show how this works. These little robots all have their job to do in order to establish power and communications in emergency situations. You set them to work, and you go about your task helping people, doing things that humans are doing
best. This is so sci-fi. Robots set up the infrastructure. The world that we're creating is going to be full of all these little kind of Roomba devices that go out and like plug themselves in and start generating power and turning on lights and running water. And
they also recharge each other.
Uh-huh.
And they're also being used them for the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. These underwater vehicles scanning for wreckage have little robots that come down and recharge the scanners, mm-hmm. you know, which is kind of nice. The scanning robots, the scanning machines. So it's like refuelers that keep things going.
Yeah. Boy, well, we're going to have to head out for our little mid-hour break and CBS News Bite in a few seconds here. But boy, we have a full slate of what's going on with machines and automation. And
and I've got some more information on those towers, those mysterious cell towers.
Right. Okay, folks, so stay tuned. We'll be back real soon with more on the Dr. Future Show on KSEO. Be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. You remember the mysterious cell tower story, Mrs. Future?
Sure.
How dozens of mysterious cell towers have showed up around the country.
Absolutely.
And no one knows much about them?
Yes, I do recall that.
I have scoured the airwaves, and our evening host,
Alex Jones, you may have recognized that little soundbite there.
Alex Jones, did talk to John McAfee. John McAfee, famous for the McAfee antivirus.
Yes.
Who has sent a team to investigate this thing and has some information to share with us on that. I took a little clip from Alex's show, InfoWars, that gives us a little information about these mysterious cell towers that have appeared across the country.
All right. Are you ready?
Okay. Play it for our
John
audience.
McAfee now joins us. McAfee, of course, was the top programmer at NASA's Institute for Space Studies in New York City. In 87, McAfee founded McAfee Associates, a computer antivirus company. McAfee's now developed new cutting-edge antivirus, anti-surveillance systems. He can give us the rest of the story. He's backtracked it on exactly what is happening with these mystery towers that we know some are Homeland Security, some are FBI, some are private, some are Stingray, but he's ferreted into the contracts themselves and discovered something. What's amazing is they sit up here like we're ignorant and go, we don't know what these towers are on CBS News, the FBI. They must be hackers. No, we got the documents in Seattle and other cities. They're Homeland Security. They're illegally stealing everything, and they have microphones listening to you. And Buckley Hammond filed a report.
Thank you, Alex. It's good to be here. I'd like to say I'm joining you from the office of a junkyard in the Appalachian Mountains of Southwest Virginia because the software I'm using to connect to you, Skype, is insecure and can't be tracked to me within a couple of hours. And by the time I'm tracked, I'll be away from here. The first thing I want to talk about, Alex, is 2.5 weeks ago, it was discovered that there were 17 cell towers in the southeast, actually, that were fake cell towers. They were, rather than transmitting phone calls directly to who you were talking to, they were planting software on the devices that you were using to connect. In the past 2.5 weeks, myself and my people have tracked down exactly what's happening. And there is only one company that manufactures this hardware, and it's mobile. You don't have to actually put a cell tower beside the road or on top of a mountain. You can put it in the back of your car and put an antenna on the top of your car and be anywhere. And they look and sound exactly like real cell towers. These devices are manufactured by the Harris Corporation in Florida, near Palm Bay, Florida. They're the only company that manufactures them. And they have a contract with all of their customers saying that the customer cannot talk about where they bought the equipment from or the fact that they own this equipment. Now, when I discovered this, I thought, that's really strange. Why would they do that? The only reason I can think of is that there are so many of them that if the American public knew to the extent that they were being spied on, we would actually all get up in arms and do something about it. Well, I'm trying to do something about it. I've started a campaign called Legalize Freedom. You can go to Legalize Freedom Campaign at blogspot.com and read about it. What I'm trying to do, Alex, is get every town in America, at least one person who will volunteer using the Freedom of Information Act to demand to know what local law enforcement people are using. Are they using this equipment? Now, how many do they have? I suspect there are hundreds of thousands of these units here in America. Their only purpose, Alex, is to spy on us. They will transfer a call as if it's transparent, but at the same time, they plant on your device a piece of software which monitors every single call that you make, which reads all of your emails, all of your text messages, your contacts, and everything that you're doing. It turns on the camera, turns on the microphone. You are now watched 24 hours a day. Now, that came out 2.5 weeks ago, these 17 cell towers. It got some play in the technical press, but then it just disappeared. No one checked into it. My people and I discovered who it is, the fact that they had these contracts, and I do suspect everywhere in America we have these things, which means that all of us are being spied on constantly, Alex.
And, of course, we then have parallel construction where they use the stolen data, the stolen video, audio, your whole databases that they scoop up, put software on your phone to basically control it. They then go lie to judges and don't even tell them where they got the fake evidence from. I mean, this is organized racketeering on the grandest scale ever seen.
Absolutely. And basically, Harris Corporation only sells to the U.S. government, the military covert agencies, the CIA, local law enforcement. And here's where the problem occurs, Alex, is once it gets in the hands of local law enforcement, you know for a fact that no matter what technology you have, if enough official people have access to it, the unofficial, the crooks, the thieves, the gangsters are going to have access to it as well. So not only are we being spied on by our governments, by the local police agencies, by the CIA, by our tax agencies, by everyone, it's now getting into the hands of the average criminal. You can buy one of these devices for less than $100,000, install it in your car, you don't need much technical competence, and you can plant software. If you had one of these devices beside a freeway, you could infect tens of thousands of mobile devices every single day. And if we have hundreds of thousands of these devices here in America, then none of us have privacy ever. Once they have the ability to turn on your camera and your microphone, if your daughter has a waterproof phone and she's taking a shower, they can watch. If you're talking to a business partner, they can hear everything that you say. We have no privacy whatsoever. And what I want to do, Alex, is to demonstrate the depth that they have gone. If, in fact, there are thousands of these devices and possibly millions, certainly, at some point, we'll have to say, it's enough. I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. Or have we gone over the edge and nobody gives a shit anymore?
People do care, John. It's just that it seems to be so overwhelming that you could have an organized program, not just with Stingray. I mean, you're right, that's the big thing nationwide. But we got documents last year from inside the government in Seattle that caused a national news story, and the city council ordered it turned off. Of course, that never happened, where they put up fake cell towers, their own systems, microphones, camera systems, you name it, and were running it through Homeland Security, through the local police department, even though it hadn't even been authorized. And then, again, they're stealing everybody's data, using it for prosecutions. They can also use it to plant stuff on phones or computers, as you've pointed out, Trojan horse people. And then they go lie in the affidavits. They go lie to the grand juries and don't even tell them where the evidence came from. I mean, this totally destroys the entire judicial system. You can't believe anything the feds say, and now the local departments are getting this. And for folks that don't know, let me give everybody a newsflash. People buy most of their drugs from the police in most big cities, at least units of them. Or you buy special equipment, guns, you name it, from cops.
Of course.
Okay? So much of this stuff continues to come out. So, yes, they already do have organized crime with this stuff. There already are organized crime hacking into people's things. This is a Pandora's box they have opened.
Right. Government wants to do one thing. All governments will eventually do the same thing. They want absolute control over the citizenry. In ancient times, they controlled people by keeping them in poverty and giving them entertainment. In ancient Rome, everyone was in poverty, but they had the Colosseum. They could all go and get entertainment every single day. That's how they controlled the citizenry. Today, people are controlled through information. If the government knows where every citizen is at every moment of the day, if they know who you're talking to, if they know what you're talking about, if they know your dreams, your desires, if they know your inner secret life, which you divulge to at least some people, your wife, your children, your mother, your father, then they control you. And we have reached the point, Alex, where someone can turn a switch and we have gotten into the world's worst dictatorship. I'm not saying that the administration has a global plan to do this and they're all secretly talking about it behind closed doors, but no, you know what's coming. You know for a fact that once we are controlled, once we have no freedom of anything, when the government knows everything about us, someone's going to go, gee, we can use this. Why don't we just throw that switch and take
control? But I've interviewed William Binney and all the other top NSA people. They say they've been using it for blackmail forever, everything you're saying, that it's now going panopticonic, surveilling everything, that it was premeditatedly designed for this, and that Snowden says they have data that would bring the whole government down. We know it's that the government basically ran 9/11. It's now coming out in the 28 pages with Saudi Arabia. We now know that it's indeed the government runs the narcotics, the snuff films, the little kids, everything. The organized crime runs the government at the top and set this up criminally to control the public and take over everything. This is an orchestrated worldwide takeover. Look at Apple with factories with suicide nets and literal forced abortions. But again, they act liberal and talk with a lisping voice, so it's okay. These people know what they're doing, John, and you have absolutely broke down how serious it was. But William Binney called it premeditated totalitarian total takeover, or 1984 on steroids. Those are all quotes by him, and it is that. With complete with helicopters and armored vehicles and checkpoints and forced inoculations and your kids don't belong to you and neighbors spying on neighbors. I mean, my God, clergy response teams, InfraGuard, spies everywhere. They have done it. And now the public is finding out it's all there. Before the establishment wanted it known, what do you think about the state of the world and where this is going?
Well, I think the problem is, Alex, people are afraid. I mean, I'm sitting here talking about it. I'm in an office at a junkyard in the middle of nowhere because I'm afraid of people retaliating. Fox News, I gave Fox News the opportunity to break this story. They thought that's great until they discovered that Harris Corporation was the corporation which has donated more to, in fact, they used to have their own television station. And they said, no, you know, we'll back away from this. People are afraid. I'm afraid, really. You should be afraid. You know for a fact that what I'm saying now and what you're saying now is not liked by the people in power. And at some point, you know, maybe they're going to take some kind of action. And worse than an audit, you know, because that's the first thing they do. They audit you mercilessly. And then maybe you get vague threats. Maybe people disappear. But somebody has to speak out, Alex. That's the number one step. No one's doing it. We are all safe and secure in our womb. We have the technology at our fingertips to have pizzas delivered, whatever we want. The world is at our fingertips, but we have no freedom. The freedom was taken away by these very technological devices that we depend on.
That's right. And they're going to take the chicken feed and the bait away. There's a piece of cheese out there on that mousetrap, but it's only to lure you in. And here's my issue. Most people in the government are actually freaked out by this as well. They don't like being brought into this conspiracy, this racketeering. They want to get out of it. It's not here to keep us safe. Our own government's funding Al-Qaeda. That's all coming out, funding ISIS. People are really concerned, and they realize the only hope we've got is to say no to this and stop it. We should all be afraid of not doing what you're doing, John, going public, what Ron Paul's doing, going public, what we're doing, what Drudge is doing. We've all got to speak out against this because it's crazy.
Well, people are saying things, Alex, like, well, it doesn't really matter if they know what I'm doing. I'm not doing anything wrong. That attitude is the most self-destructive attitude I can possibly imagine. It doesn't matter if you're doing something wrong. Who cares? I don't want you in my business whether I'm doing something right.
Well, John, that's like the people that would put, I'm going to Mexico for Christmas for a week and a half. We leave tomorrow and come back such and such. Look at all the stuff we got at Christmas. We got a new silver set. And then the thieves use it to rob your house. It's like saying, I'll get in a car because I have nothing to fear. It's Ted Bundy. It's not that you're a nice 16-year-old girl, so what do you have to fear? It's that Ted Bundy just pulled up. Ted Bundy. Okay? John Wayne Gacy, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Jeffrey Dahmer runs the New World Order. It's like, who cares if Sauron's Palantir can see what I'm doing? It's Sauron. It's bad. A bad guy built this.
There you go. Just to let you know that we do track Alex Jones' role. I don't necessarily agree totally with his perspective on this, but I do think that the Harris information is very interesting.
And we did report on that a couple weeks ago, and right this second we got to go to a break, so we'll talk about it when we come back.
Do
Two conservatives with frequently different perspectives.
Written and paid for by the trial lawyers.
You're talking about all kinds of things, and it doesn't sound like you know what you're talking about.
I think she should have been left to wallow in the anonymity she so richly deserves.
Oh, you mean the risky one.
Weekdays, noon to 2 on KSEO AM 1080.
And another reason to vote no on Prop 46.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yeah, it is concerning that we have this technology that can monitor our cell phones, and not only monitor them, but install software on them so that they can turn on the camera and the microphone at will. This is kind of scary, but if you look at it from an entrepreneurial point of view, anybody who comes up with an app that can detect if your camera and your microphone is on when you don't want it to be, could do pretty well selling an app along those lines. It's important not to be a victim of this technology. It's easy to get paranoid and fearful about these things, and that really doesn't accomplish a lot in the long run. I think it makes way more sense to actually think about what you can do about it to safeguard your freedoms and to maintain your sovereignty and to stay in your own sense of what's real and what's not. John McAfee has dealt a lot with running from people, but he's also done a lot to instigate things, too. He spied on governments himself by putting spyware into computers that government officials have used, not so much in this country, but in Belize.
Well, we're creating the future all together, all the time. So whatever we believe, that's what we create together. If we believe that humans are going to succeed in enslaving other humans in the future, and that a whole bunch of us are going to be disempowered by a tiny minority of us who are elitists, who are wielding all the tools with the robo machines. You know, it's a belief system, and it's a lousy belief system. So when I ask myself, like, what am I personally going to do about the potential threat of all of this potential for evil with people spying instead of being like forthright? I am looking forward into a world that's better than the past, not a world that's worse than the past. What I am doing about it is empowering myself to not participate in that kind of world as much as possible. When I hear that all of the powerful agencies of this country are in a conspiracy to oppress the masses, then I want to expose that. And I want to say, anybody who's part of that oppression force, shame on you. Let's give the power to the people who are forthright and honest and trustworthy. And let's give our media attention to discovering the heroes of the world and to an honest portrayal of goodness instead of a constant portrayal of evil that gives us no hope. I really think that the majority of the people in this world, if they could be self-empowered, would be part of a world that works for everyone. So let's focus on how to make people self-empowered. And let's not focus on fearing that every single person in the world who has any power is a criminal who's out to control the rest of us and work against the good of all. Hmm. It's a belief. It's a belief system.
Mm-hmm. Well, in looking at how we got this way, I have a really interesting anthropological study of the difference between cultures that came from forests and those that came from deserts.
Uh-huh. Okay.
From Stanford anthropologist Robert Textor. It's a very, very interesting article that attempts to link culture with climate and ecology. And he comes up with some very interesting generalizations, I guess you'd say, because anthropologists are generalists. They study cross-cultural patterns, and they cautiously tread around ideological biases, and this article is no exception. With that said, let's look at the differences in religious beliefs between forest people and desert people. A striking proportion of rainforest dwellers are polytheistic. They worship an array of spirits and gods. Okay? Polytheism is prevalent among tribes in the Amazon basin, New Guinea, Southeast Asia, Borneo, Vietnam. But desert dwellers, the Bedouin of Arabia, the Berbers of the Western Sahara, the Kalahari Kung people, the Turkana of the Kenyan Sudanese desert, they're usually monotheistic. So desert tribes tend to be monotheistic.
I guess there's less things to worship in the desert.
Well, despite allegiances to a single deity, they may have other supernatural beings as well. Like, they often have angels and jinns and Satan. for the desert. But the hierarchy is notable, with minor deities subservient to the omnipotent one.
In the desert cultures.
Yeah, in the desert cultures.
They're into one god, and a big giant hierarchy instead of many gods and basic equality.
Deserts teach large singular lessons like how tough, spare, withholding the environment is. The world is reduced to a simple, desiccated, furnace-blasted basic reality. Imagine the rainforest world where there's an abundance of edible plants and medicinal herbs. You can identify more species of ants on a single tree than one would find in all of the British Isles.
Wow.
Now, letting 1,000 deities bloom in this sort of setting must seem more natural.
Well, it's kind of the goddess versus the god, right?
Yeah.
It's like this diverse, abundant richness versus this stern, oppressive harshness.
Seems like that. Even some rainforest dwellers that are monotheistic, the anthropologists have found that they're much less likely to believe that their god sticks his or her nose into other people's business by controlling the weather or prompting illness or that sort of thing.
Yeah, so more like in a polytheistic culture, all the gods are just more of the people. They're just more of the beings that are there on the landscape.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a part to play. Nobody's the only one making it happen.
Right. Right. Well, in contrast, the desert seems to breed fatalism, a belief in an interventionalist god with its own capricious plans. Desert societies are classic spawning grounds for warrior classes as well, and accessories of militarism. Military trophies are stepping stones to ancestral status, and you know, your death in battle guarantees a glorious afterlife. So these cultures are stratified with a centralized authority. Gee, I wonder which one we came from. So we do live in a rainforest in Boulder Creek.
Yeah.
So it does seem we're at a point in California where we can evaluate these origins and see if we can come up with something a little bit more realistic.
Our people bring their culture with them these days. Between traveling the planet and media everywhere, we're not in that world anymore. We're studying the past as if that's going to be the future, but I think we're going to see a very mutated future where those cultures are historical relics. The future beings are going to be homogenized in modern inventions.
Yes, and it seems to do with the element of abundance as well. There's much more of an abundance thinking in the rainforest cultures while you're really scrapping for resources in a more desert environment.
That
creates a different demand on the peoples, and a different type of infrastructure is needed to survive. The jungle cultures have less of a hierarchy with women as well. Rainforest men give thanks and prayer. They don't see themselves as better than the females. It's a big topic. Check out the article. It's from Discover Magazine. There was a very interesting story that's come out this week, and I'm not sure what to think about it. It's from the CBC News. It's about NASA, and it's about how a NASA scientist who has been studying fossilized evidence of potential alien life in a meteorite is saying that very possibly this could confirm that life is not restricted to Earth. Now, this is a big deal because scientists are very, very careful about this topic. They don't want to ascribe that we've discovered any kind of alien life unless we really have the authorities acknowledging this, that this is real. The claim that several types of meteorites contain fossils of microscopic creatures similar to cyanobacteria, or some would call it blue-green algae, that originated beyond Earth has created quite a stir, and there are about 100 experts that have been invited to review the research on this topic. At focus here is astrobiologist Richard Hoover, who works at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and he made the claim in a study published online late Friday in the peer-reviewed publication, The Journal of Cosmology. Hoover is a highly respected scientist with a prestigious record of accomplishment at NASA. Nonetheless, the editor-in-chief, Rudy Child, of the Journal of Cosmology, has invited 100 experts to review the findings before they publish their results this week. Quote, "No other paper in the history of science has undergone such a thorough analysis, and no other scientific journal in the history of science has made such a profoundly important paper available to the scientific community for comment before it is published." And basically, Hoover had examined freshly fractured inner surfaces of what's called the carbonaceous chondrite under a high-powered microscope. That's the most primitive of all known meteorites, the carbonaceous chondrites. These meteorites contain a large amounts of water and organic material, each of which is necessary for the kind of life found on Earth. Inside the meteorites, which were discovered in the Antarctic, Hoover found bacteria-like creatures. Bacteria-like creatures that he concludes did not come from Earth. Are these bacteria-like creatures really from the rock, or are they likely contaminated with Earth microbes? So, that is the controversy. Now, it's a big deal. If we're really going to claim extraterrestrial life, we really should have some solid evidence for that, don't you think?
All right, desert folks. So that's the end of the first hour of Dr. Future. We're going to go off for some news and weather. Then we'll be back with some very interesting guests and more conversation in the second hour. And this is the Dr. Future Show on KSCO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, San Jose, and Monterey.
Thanks for listening.
Tomorrow.